period of time I thought, I'll never paint again. And I have learned from this year that creativity is like a tide. And now I know this, this is so much, it's a real gift to know this now.
Well, hello, hello, and welcome back to Art Juice. This is episode 96 of Art Juice, with honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and hopefully get you thinking, with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
How are you this week?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. I've been out for a nice, misty, beautiful dog walk before we do this, and I've had really quite a cracking week. We have got something slightly different, as you will have heard from our intro. That was not me and that was not Louise. We have two guest interviews with artists who we've mentioned previously, and we promise you that we would go a little bit deeper into both of their stories about how this year has been, what they have discovered, and some new projects that they have been involved in this year that they probably wouldn't have been able to plan at all at the beginning. And it's lovely. We've listened back to both of them, and I think they have very different things to share. So we hope that you're going to enjoy that. But before we get into that, what have you personally been working on?
Well, I've been a busy bee, but a lot of my week seems to have been taken up with a screwdriver and a pair of snippers, which I've been pulling staples out of canvases to get them off stretcher bars. Such a big experiment. Alice is shaking her head, but it all worked out. So the story is that I bought these massive canvases, and then I just cannot make anything decent on canvas. I can't. So eventually I thought, well, I have this big 5-foot by 4-foot one that I've been working on. I thought, I've got two choices here. I can either give up and waste all this money, or I can try taking this off the stretcher bars and then paint on it, and then try and get it back on the stretcher bars. And what's the worst that could happen? You know, I've already wasted the money. So 2 hours pulling those little staples out.
That's what I'm shaking my head about. You don't do it with a screwdriver. You need a thing. And here's a clue. It's called a staple remover. And you just slide it in and hold your thumb down and pull the staples out.
Yeah, well, I asked my friend, my handy friend, and he said, oh, you don't want to buy anything. They're useless, those things. They always break. Here, I'll show you how to do it. When he did it, 1 second, you know, in, screw out, it was so easy. Then he left. Then when I do it, not so easy. So he's used to do it. Anyway, I shall purchase a staple remover.
It is not a fun job. Having done it on a sofa, I spent about, at least 4 hours. Maybe it was even an entire day, and your hands at the end of it. It's like, how many staples are in a sofa? A lot.
I know. Lot. So then I had this 5-foot by 4-foot piece of canvas, which I was on my own. So I was wrestling. Phil wasn't around. There's no one to hold it for me. I was trying to tape it to the wall. So there was a lot of cursing while it kept flopping off on one side on my head while I taped the other side up. But I got it up on my painting wall. And I finished the painting in a week. It just went so well as soon as I could scrape and sand and rub and scratch. And then managed to get it back on the stretcher bars, which was the scary part. Because when I had now a painting that I love, and what if it wouldn't go back on? And then I thought, well, then I'll have to get someone to make me some new stretcher bars and I'll have to get it done professionally. But actually it's worked out okay and it's back on. And I now have 2 more 1-meter by 1-meter canvases, which are not going well and which I think I'm going to have to do the same thing with. And from now on, obviously, I won't buy any more large canvases. I've bought a big roll and I'm going to prime that and work on that and then buy and then order. I think from Jackson's, you can order stretcher bars and put them together yourself. So that will be future. But what's nice is 3 years of really seriously working pretty much full time on my painting, and I finally discovered the substrate that I really prefer to work on. So, you know, sometimes it takes time.
It does. But just tell me, when it was off, did you find that it was it just regular masking tape to hold it into the wall, or you didn't fix it to the wall with you didn't kind of screw it into the wall or nail it into the
wall? No, I just fixed it with, you know, brown packing tape.
Oh yeah.
Don't do that, people, because that made where the water it made marks on my painting wall that are horrible because I don't mind paint marks, but these are brown tape marks. So I'm going to have to go over with emulsion on my painting wall, but also on the bottom of the canvas where wet paint dripped down, it seems to have left a stain on, which I managed to get off with Murphy's oil soap, but it was a lot of messing about.
Right.
So I would be used, maybe frog tape would have been fine if I'd used enough of it, but that packing tape is really heavy duty. Or maybe like industrial masking tape. It's just the brown stuff leaves a residue. But yeah, that was
in something to support the fabric so it doesn't split, and then a couple of maybe screws would hold it into place.
Small yeah. One. People have probably got lots of good ideas that I didn't think about.
That's always the thing though, isn't it? It's like when you do something for the first time, you don't even necessarily know what are the questions. You kind of figure it all out, and then there probably is a much better way of doing it. So yeah, if you do this, anyone, you know, let us know. I'd quite like to know actually. You know, what's going to be a best way of doing it?
I think it is that thing. I had a few people who I told what I was doing say, but how are you going to get it back on and what are you going to do? And I think that's just the thing that's my downfall and my strength is I just think, well, I don't know, but I'll figure that out. Yeah. There's got to be a solution. You know, there really has to be a solution. I watched a video on YouTube of Pamela Cauhey, for anyone who knows Pamela, Caughey. And I loved this. She'd done two large pieces on paper, which she was planning to mount to 1 meter panels. But then they were the wrong size. She'd slightly cut the paper the wrong size, so it wouldn't fit on 1 meter square panels. So she was there with this saying, what am I going to do? You know, I've got this thing and I love it, but it's not going to fit. And so what she did was she cut it into four different sized panels. She cut the painting into four different, one thin, one fat, one thin but not as thin as the other, and then one very thin. And she made like whatever, it's not a, is it a quattro tip? Whatever it is when you have four paintings and making up one. And it looked fantastic. And I just thought, problem solving. You know, we're creative enough that whatever had happened, it would have worked out. So that was it. And the only other thing I've got this week is that I have this thing that happens whenever the seasons change where my palette changes. And it's so weird how it happens. I used to think it was just a coincidence, but after these years now, I can see it happens every time. So as it's got cold and grey and wet, my palette started to get more wintry. And it's funny because I said on Instagram, oh, I'm using cooler colours. And you went, well, that looks pretty warm to me. But yeah. For me, these are cool colours. You know, yeah. For me, these are like, I don't have blue in my paintings, and now blue's coming in, quite a lot of it. And it's just so interesting how that happens. In autumn, it'll be reds and golds, and then it just shifts. And I don't know if the same thing happens does that happen to you?
I think it does. I mean, I definitely go through different colour phases that I think are triggered by different things, and change of season is definitely one of them. But it's just always interesting, isn't it? This feeling of warm and cool is quite hard to define, and I think it's very personal interpretations that you were feeling them as cool. I saw them as really rich, deep, lustrous kind of purples and things that you use.
But purple's cool.
No, purple's cool. Can be really warm.
I would say this is a warmer violet purple. Yeah, it's warmer on the scale of purple.
Yeah.
But purple's still cool when you're comparing it to yellow, orange and red, which is what I had been working with. This is blue and purple, so it's definitely, you know, but what was interesting was I said cooler colours because I know I can't work with cool colours. Just can't do it. I love buying paintings with cool colours, which is probably because it brings something different into my world, but I can't work with them. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting.
It's the feeling that it gives, isn't it? Because you can get warm and cool yellows and warm and cool purples, and they have a different sense, but it's the overall feeling. It's just how it strikes you. So yeah, that was good. Well, I'm glad that you're taking it off and putting it back on again worked. Physical challenge. I bet that gave you a workout.
It did. So what have you been up to this week?
Well, I've had some good workouts this week. I've been cycling back into the studio. I did nearly get knocked over yesterday, not by a car, but by another cyclist who yelled at me for crossing the road on a green cyclist pedestrian light as he was driving through a red light and nearly hit me and yelled at me. And I was like, you're the one who's cycling through a red light. Anyway, that got my blood slightly boiling. But I actually have to say, I'm enjoying that cycle ride in now. So that's been quite good fun. And it's even just broken that back of, because I've said this before, the whole thing about having a studio outside home, it's great as a space to do it. Obviously, it's given me much more space than I've got at home. But it is a big, it's a mental hurdle because it's a time constraint getting there. And it has been a problem. But what I'm finding with the cycling there is, it's this thing about relying only on yourself. I'm not reliant on the traffic. I'm not reliant on the trains going. I'm not sitting going in the wrong direction and coming back again. I know it's going to take me 20 to 25 minutes on a bike to get there. And as long as I avoid the rain, then it feels like it's reliably back on my own shoulders. And certainly one day this week, I had a day where I thought, nah, I haven't got time to go to the studio. And I thought, just literally get on your bike and go. And I did only have an hour and a half when I got there. But I made some good progress in that hour and a half because my time was condensed. So it was yet again that learning of, you know, even small, just move things forward in a small way, and it feels really good. So I kind of feel like I've had a little bit of a psychological breakthrough on travel to the studio, which is good. It's fun.
Plus you're getting your exercise.
I am getting my exercise, although my phone is not recording it. It doesn't seem to record cycle rides as steps. So I kind of think I've had a really good active day, and then it looks like it's tailed off. So I'm not paying any attention to that, but it's good.
No, you know that's not right.
Yeah, and I've even bought myself a reflective jacket now. God help me.
Oh. Well, you need it though, because in this light, yeah, it's dull now in England, sometimes all day, and people don't look, and it's quite scary driving. I'm often driving late afternoon when the light's just going,
yeah,
and people are out running, and you go in along country lanes, and I'm not going fast, but all of a sudden there's someone there, yeah, at the, you know, running down the road, and they've got those head torches on, but that's not much help because you don't see the whole figure until you get, yeah, close. So
yeah,
I think that clothing is a really good idea.
Well, I've got a really sci-fi one, and the whole jacket, it's not just yellow high visibility. It's made of that funny stuff that reflects. So you look like the Ready Breck man. you literally, it's all silver reflective. So yeah, that's me and my new kit. So I've had a very good week.
How's the painting gone?
The painting is good. I have something that perhaps I might be able to update you with next week that gave me a little bit of rocket fuel in terms of getting some things finished, but I've just got to hold my horses on that at the moment. But yes.
Ooh.
Good.
Exciting. Secrets, everybody. Secrets.
Okay, so let's listen to our two stories. We recorded these separately, and you may have to be a little bit forgiving of perhaps some of the sound quality on some of them might be a little bit up and down. So sorry about that, but I hope that you enjoy the two very different approaches, that there's some real practical tips in here and there is some inspiration for you too. So let's have a listen and then we will catch up with what we learned about them. Here we go. So I'm here today talking to Faye Bridgewater. Many of you may have come across her before, but if you haven't, Faye, hello, it's really lovely to have you join us. Just let us know, where are you calling from?
Hi, Alice. Thank you so much for having me here today. I live in Brighton, which is in the UK, and it's on the south coast. So I'm very lucky. I have a sea view from my bedroom window, and I get to see that wonderful horizon every day. I feel blessed.
And tell us where you were, because it's been a challenging year, and But for you, it's been a really exciting year, which is one of the reasons that we just wanted to have a kind of check-in today. It was November 2019 that we had a discussion about an idea that you had had in your work, and you weren't really sure if it had any legs. Tell us about what that was.
I love the fact that you remember the date, because I'm so terrible with dates. I couldn't have told you when I first came up with that idea. So I've got this wonderful Fabriano paper, which is just beautiful to work on. I also run a Facebook group, which is all about photography in Brighton. And there was something about the continued flickering through my phone of the photographs and Instagram, and also this Fabriano paper, and I wanted to do something together. So I drew 140 tiny little squares on the paper, and so you go on a journey through this painting.
Yeah, so each square is only, what, under an inch, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say about an inch, yeah.
Time consuming to draw out. And, you know, when we spoke, we just said, well, just let's just follow this through. And I think everybody's reaction to it when you shared it was, yeah, this is exciting. This is different. This feels like it's worth following. So what has happened, though, since then?
Well, I must say it's because of you, Alice, and we had a little chat and connected artists, and you really gave me that boost to go for it. Go on. You sometimes need that as an artist, don't you? As a little, you know, this is a good idea. So I went for it and I entered a few competitions with a few different ones. The first one, it was 2020 January, and I thought, right, I'm going to do something positive with this year. And I entered the Royal Institute of Painters in Watercolour. It's a long one. And I took the painting up there. It got selected. Yes, I was so excited. I couldn't believe it. And then, of course, lockdown happened, and I was like, oh, there was meant to be this amazing PV, and I was going to be drinking champagne and, you know, going up on the train in my lovely frock. And then it all didn't happen. But I got an email saying I'd won a prize for this picture, and I could not believe it. Honestly, it was just an absolute thrill.
So that was the John Purcell paper prize, wasn't it, for that one? But also, you also won the Derwent Art Prize, right?
I did. I just, I don't know where I got this confidence from, but I just thought this year, 2020, there's an actual video of me on the beach on New Year's Day going, 2020, best year ever, which I keep watching because it's so funny. And I entered that other competition and my work was selected again. This was 140 drawings of the Murmurations. And these Murmurations are the starlings perform this amazing dance between the two piers down here in Brighton. And if you haven't ever looked up a Murmuration, please do, because it is magical. And so I did 140 studies of the Murmuration. They were quite expressive little drawings. Yeah. And I got selected, and then there was this chance to win the People's Choice Award, and I won it. I couldn't believe it. So I won two prizes.
It's a funny thing, isn't it, that having to be brave and put yourself out there, both for entering things and for asking for other people's support. How easy do you find it to ask for support? Because I know it's something that I struggle with, and I think I don't think it's unusual. I think lots of people struggle with asking for backup and support, because we're asking the attention to be on us.
I know. And there's also something funny about voting for art. It's a little bit uncomfortable, isn't it? That, you know, vote for my painting. It just seems a little bit uncomfortable. But I just thought, I'm in it now. The PR that I've got from winning that prize, it has been amazing.
But it's a really good example, isn't it? How we're taking that brave step, if you like, in the first place, and I'm sure you'd be the first to agree that sometimes, you know, winning these kind of things is a matter of luck, and also you have to be in it, but also then it gives you this kind of rolling momentum. It gives you subjects and topics to talk about in all your communications. There's a degree of reinforcement that comes from it, not only how other people see you, but in your confidence level.
Oh my goodness. The collection of work I made after winning those prizes, I was so buoyant. I couldn't stop blooming painting. I just had this sort of joy coming out of me onto the canvas, and I just couldn't stop, you know. It sort of reassured me that I was, the marks that I made, the brush marks, the work I was making, not only did I love it, but others loved it too. So, yeah, it really gives you a platform and your foundations, I suppose, to say, do it, go for it. And that last collection was just, I couldn't stop painting. It came very easily.
But just before that, am I right? You had a little patch where you weren't feeling it. You were a bit flat.
Yeah, I had a call with you, didn't I? Oh my gosh. We were homeschooling. I think for me, it was before we actually knew it was going to be for the whole of the summer.
Yeah.
It was that anxiety. I was very uncertain about everything. I was really, really terrible at homeschooling. And because I wasn't enjoying it, my children weren't enjoying it, then there's the guilt. And I did feel, I thought there was a period of time I thought, I'll never paint again. And I have learned from this year that creativity is like a tide. And now I know this is so much, it's a real gift to know this, yeah, now, knowing that it will come back again. So yeah, it's been a real learning curve for me, the whole experience of this. Where are we now? October.
It is really funny, isn't it? I mean, I don't know where we actually get this idea from. I suppose, you know, from school, where we have a systemized timetable where things are regular, but maybe we just carry that with us and we expect making art. I mean, I know I did, expected making art to be the same, but, and it goes through such ebbs and flows. It's funny. Mm. I mean, and you know, I use the phrase ebbs and flow, but I've never thought of it as a tide. I think of it as this thing that goes and comes back, but I agree with you entirely. The minute I realize, and I think you have to go through it and come back a few times, when you know that it's going to come back, it gives you that confidence. And when I'm not feeling it now, I might get a little bit frustrated, but I no longer feel anxious that it's gone for good. And that is such a relief.
I know, it's such a, I feel very lucky to have realised this now in this year. That it's been a real gift to get this piece of knowledge. And you know, I'm almost quite looking forward to the next time. I've got so many ideas at the moment. I can't sleep. Yeah, I'm just like continuous from the moment I wake up now. At the moment, I am full of ideas, lists and lists everywhere. And
but there's also that sense that you don't have to do it all at once.
When
you want your foot on the accelerator pedal, you can. And then when you want to give yourself a break, you can take a pause from it.
Yeah, I think everyone's feeling it, and there's this sort of huge amount of anxiety sitting over everyone at the moment. If I can just keep to the joy of the feeling of putting paint on the canvas, for me that's enough at the moment. You know, I'm not thinking I must go on holiday, I must, you know, where's the inspiration? I'm taking the inspiration from out my bedroom window. I am finding the joy in my local surroundings.
That's a really good point. It's a really good point. And I think the other thing that I just would, you know, love you to share with people is where you actually create. Now, I know in the summer you use your garden a lot, which isn't going to be easy going into the winter. But until then, you work from home.
I do. I work from home. I do paint in my garden a lot. I have an incredibly tiny studio in my house. However, I've done lots of thought over the last few months. Do I want a studio outside the house? Do I want one with other artists? Or do I want one in the house? And we are in the process, dun, 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 of building a studio at the end of the garden. My children are small. They're 8 and 10. My days are short. I've got to, you know, be here when they finish school. So I've got between 9 and 2:30, and that's my creating time. If I can be here in the studio, but still looking after the children, if they're playing in the garden, it's the best solution for me. And actually, what's been the most amazing thing is because I've had this fantastic year art-wise, is that everyone who has bought paintings from me this year are contributing towards the studio. They are helping me with my art journey. So they're taking me to the next level, which is just, I love the fact that I did really well at the cow shed where you were. So I was like, right, I'm going to do a concrete base then. You know, so it's been really great that the art has provided this space for me.
And that's all we can ask, I think, is to just keep moving forward and looking for what these stepping stones are. I mean, I always talk about it as you have to have a degree of faith in your art. And I think particularly if you're going to ask other people to put that faith in your work too, which is essentially what we do when we make our work available for sale, we're asking anybody else to say, yeah, I think, you know, you think there is a value in this, I think there is a value in this too. And we have to do that ourselves. So to take what you're doing and to constantly trust in yourself and reinvest in yourself and move forward, it's always felt to me a little bit like I have this thought in my mind about crossing a lake with stepping stones, but misty. It's misty, like you can't see where the other side is. All you can see is the next couple of stepping stones ahead of you, and you just have to keep taking a step across a stepping stone. And
so I've got so many ideas that, I don't know if you saw my pebble picture I did.
Yes.
Which just was incredible. Alice, honestly, people from all over the world are sending me their weather paintings. So what I did was I got a piece of paper. I thought it was going to rain for a week. So I got a piece of paper. I put it outside. I thought, what can I put on it? I found my box of hag stones, which is a stone with a hole in the middle, which you get down here in Sussex, and they're going to be a bit magical. I place them on the paper, and I kept adding, I harvested rainwater. This sounds like I'm completely mad now. And then I used that rainwater to paint the picture. And every day, I left it out there for 7 days and seven nights, and I'd video the process, how it looked in the morning to how it looked at night. It was heavy rain and bright sunshine. And I cannot tell you how much that connected with people. This idea of the ever-evolving painting that I couldn't really control. So,
but again, that's another example. Firstly, you're really good on social media. A pebble picture was just fantastic because it was just an idea and it started. It wasn't a big plan out. And like you say, it just took off. But you're really good at social media. How important has that been this year?
Oh, well, I love social media. I am addicted.
Tell us why.
So I am a social being. I love being with people. I love connecting. But being an artist is quite an actual lonely occupation, especially if you're in a studio on your own. And the thing with Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, so on, you can connect with people. You've got an idea, boom, you put it out there, somebody comments on it, you're having a conversation.
So here's the thing, because people say that they find it hard. What would you say, what would be your piece of advice for people who find social media difficult?
Okay, for me, I'm a bit opposite to quite a lot of people like Alice and other people.
She's going to say I'm organised now. I'm not.
So I don't have a social media plan at all. I share what's happening in my life that day. That's in front of my eyes, and it is it's not thought about the day before or the week before. I just think, right, today I'm painting this, or today that view's inspired me, or a story, a funny story. And it's totally authentic. I can't be anything but who I am. I don't use any fancy words, even though I went to university. I know all the terminology. I just can't be asked with any of that. And I really want to just connect with everyone. And that's the most important thing for me. I hate the thought of art being elitist. I want it to be for everyone.
Yeah.
So I'm passionate about that.
So if anybody doesn't know you, just tell us, where can they find you on Instagram?
So I'm Faye, and this is very important, actually.
Very important.
I've got a funny spelling of my name. So I'm Faye, F-A-Y-E, and then I'm underscore, and then Bridgewater without an E in the middle. So it's very confusing, and I can only blame my parents and my husband for this, because I didn't choose either of them.
Okay, and your website is faybridgewater.com, so that's really easy to remember. And what do you have coming up?
So terrifyingly, in 4 weeks' time, I'm doing artist open houses down here in Brighton, and I've decided to do this as a booking system. I thought with COVID and this crazy time, it would keep everyone safe. And actually, I'm quite looking forward to this now, because everybody that walks in, I'm going to be able to tell them the journey of my paintings. I'm going to be really able to dedicate my time to them. And also, I'm not just doing it in person, but you can also have a virtual tour. So I'm offering these half an hour slots, and yep, lots of people have booked. And it's, I when I put it out there, I thought, oh no, nobody's going to book and I should just open the doors. But actually, I think it's going to be good. I'm really looking forward to it.
So when you say 4 weeks' time, this is November the 21st to December the 13th.
Yeah.
So when this is out on the podcast, if you want to, if you're interested in going to have a look, do go over and have a look at Faye's website. I think also this whole development of how we as artists have to develop and do things in a new way, it's another creative thing, isn't it? And again, it was something that we had a discussion about in the group, and we've seen lots of people managing, doing silent auctions, open studios in different ways, and you're actually using Eventbrite, aren't you, for your half-hour slots?
I am, and again, of course, because I'm dyslexic, I found that very difficult, so I did delegate that to my husband, poor suffering husband. But actually, again, when you're dyslexic and an artist, you have to find these different ways of adapting, and actually delegation is brilliant.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for giving your time to us today. It has been lovely, and I just think all these stories of good things that have happened this year, which are really encouraging, and again, I know that people sometimes feel a little bit hesitant about sharing those, and it doesn't happen for all of us all the time. You know, sometimes we have these slow pauses or things that, you know, don't quite work out the way we want, disappointments, but just this gentle evolution with these real odd bursts of things that happen. I'm very happy to admit I'm massively envious of prizes. I have not won a prize ever for my work, but you've got to be in it to win it, right? And I haven't submitted to anything recently, so more fool me, right?
You've got to be in it to win it, Alice. Do it next year. Do it next year. And I must say, it's really because of the connected artists and you, really, because I was probably the first person to sign up, was I?
Possibly.
I was definitely in the top 10, I think. And really, if I think how far I've come in that time, it's crazy, isn't it, Alice?
Yeah. Well, I think how far, you know, we've all come together, really. And that's what's very special about it from my point of view, is that, you know, it never promised to be the whole solution to everything, but it's just this beautifully evolving
interaction
between people.
Is when I'm feeling nervous or I've got a question about something practical, I know there's a group of people who are supporting me and all want each other to do well. And you can just go onto the group and ask a question, and within a minute it's answered. And it's so reassuring to know there's a gang of people looking out for you. So it's
probably because I never had a cool gang at school, isn't it? You've got to make it now. Well, best wishes for a fantastic 2021. I hope you're going to have another video on the beach saying 2021 is going to be better.
Best year ever, yeah. Best year ever.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. And I hope everybody enjoys listening to this and that this has left you feeling uplifted. Thanks, Faye.
Thanks, Alice. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thank you.
hi, Gwyn. Thank you so much for being with me.
No problem. Great to be here.
Gwyn is an artist with a wide range of interests, and I met her in another online group, and she mentioned having written a book about her paintings and included her artwork and photographs in a book. And I just thought, how interesting. That's something that I'm interested in doing at some point in the future, and I know some of you will be. So I thought we'd just learn more about it, and also I think it's a really inspirational thing to have done and taken on yourself. So I'm really glad that you agreed to be here and talk to me about it. It's called Memories of St. Ives by Gwyn Penny. So first of all, tell us how you got the idea to do this.
It all came about through lockdown, to be honest. Around about April, so we'd been in lockdown for a couple of weeks, and it started to dawn on me that trips that I had got planned down to St. Ives in May weren't going to happen. And obviously felt quite bad about that. And I started thinking, well, what can I do to cheer myself up and make the most of the time during lockdown? And it coincided with this 100-day project that is run, I think, most years. And that launched in April. And I thought, right, what can I do for a 100-day project? I know, I'll go through all my photographs from St. Ives, because I've got many going back years. And you know what it's like? You go to places like St. Ives, you take all these photos and you go home and you think, great, I'm going to do something with those when I get home. And it never happens because other priorities hit you when you get home and they just sit there on your camera roll. So I thought, right, this is the ideal opportunity. I'm going to go through all the photos and I'm going to use them for inspiration to do some small paintings. And I started out and I did a few paintings on paper and the first few days of the project. And I posted them on Instagram and I started writing about them as I was posting them. And pretty soon it became more about the writing and about the memory than about the painting. So that's really how it kind of kicked off.
Somebody asked me in an email, she lives somewhere abroad, and her inspiration is the English countryside. And she said, I can't feel like I can't paint because my inspiration is far away from me. And at the time, my suggestion to her was, could you paint the longing for the place? Could you paint the memories of the place? Could you paint that's a thing too. You don't have to be in the place, which is exactly what you did here. Not being able to be there, you kind of went back there in words and in art.
Yeah, totally.
What is special about St. Ives to you?
Gosh, so many things, but I think it is for me a big source of inspiration. You know, I go there and it's effortless. Every corner I walk around, yeah, I walk along the beach and there's just so much inspiration all over the place. And it's a real sort of recharge for me when I go there. And I started going there with my husband back in the early 90s. And I've met a lot of people there that have said the same thing. They go there every year and they never get bored of it. They just love being there. And we've been there most years. And in fact, we got married in 2018. We've been together a very long time, but we decided to get married quite late after about 20 years. And we got married just down the road from St. Ives in St. Just. And we had our honeymoon in St. Ives. So it's a very special place to both of us, really. And I just love the scenery. I love the feeling of it. You know, it's 300 miles away to the southwest from where I live, but it feels like walking into another world, totally. It's so relaxed and yeah, I just love it down there.
So the book, what's excellent about the book, and there's going to be, now I presume people can buy this because I was going to say there's going to be a link to buy it. Can people buy it?
Yes, it's available on Blurb, which is a website where you can self-publish.
Excellent. So there'll be a link where you can get your own copy of this book. But what I really loved about it is what you said came about by accident almost, which is the combination of the words and the images. Which came first? Is it the words that came first or the painting that came first?
Well, the starting point was the photographs. So I went through my phone and I compiled an album with all the photographs that I wanted to feature. And so every time I chose one, I was starting to think about what it meant to me and what memories it invoked. And then I just had the notepad application on my phone, and every day I'd go in at some point and I'd just start noting down about that particular memory. And sometimes it was a combination of more than one photograph that triggered the memories. And then the paintings kind of came afterwards in a way. I sat down one weekend and I, you know, started a whole load of them in sequence. And so they're just little 6 inch by 6 inch on panels. They were painted with a reference to the photographs, but it's also the memory of the places as well.
I was just going to say, one of my favourites is Scones with a Sea View. I just love it because it's so specific. In fact, all of these are very specific memories, which is what makes them so moving. So there's this amazing painting of scones and Cornwall pottery mug, whatever you call that, blue and white striped pottery, and the beach in the distance. But the words, suitcases finally at rest, we arrive at our new home for the week, the bustle and chatter of the wharf fades into the background as we cross the threshold and take in the view from the seaward windows. I just love that. I wouldn't think to write about that, but then as you shut the door, the noise just goes away and you're in your own little space. I love that. And then settling down for these scones and you're about to go shopping, but first of all, you're just going to enjoy yourself. It's just really, I love the specificity of it.
I tried not to write too much about food, but as I think you'll pick up from the book, food features quite heavily in our holidays down there. And it's, you know, it's the whole kind of multi-sensory thing of taste, sight, touch, smell. It's all those things that form the memories, I think.
Tell me about like the process. So you've got the paintings. How long did it take you to make all the paintings?
I sat down one weekend and I did probably a couple of passes that weekend on about half a dozen of them. And then it only took a couple more passes to complete them.
And so you've got the paintings, you've got the words, and then how, because I know you mentioned blur, but I've never done this. So how do you go about taking your stuff, if anybody else wants to do this, and turning it into a book?
There's a couple of ways that you can do it. So when you go to the website, they give you a step-by-step of how you can do it. And I have actually done it before. I've done a couple of other small photo books. And my mother wrote a book, a fiction book, and I had it self-published on Blurb for her. So I did have some experience with using it before. And they have an application called Bookwrite, which is book and then write as in wheel, write, W-R-I-G-H-T. And so I downloaded that, and you can use that to set all the pages and put all the copy in and put the images in. And it gives you a pretty good preview of how the finished book will appear. So I used that to set it all up. And so it was just a case of copying and pasting the words from my notepad and did a few little edits on the way and then getting the photographs and getting those in. I think probably the most difficult thing for me was the timing of it. It was my dad's birthday in August, so I had to set myself a deadline of finishing it by the end of July. And then it was a little bit chicken and egg with the pictures, because I was putting them in while they were still in development. So I had several iterations of some of the paintings as they were being finished. And then I did a final sort of set of photography and got them all in at the end whilst I was doing a sort of tidying up. So just making sure that everything is in the right position and doing those last little final edits. And then you upload the book, and that's a bit of a nail biting moment, because till that point you don't really know exactly how it's going to come out. So you're sort of sitting there with fingers crossed uploading, and then you can preview it, and then you can order copies and set it up on their store to sell. So that's really in a nutshell the kind of production process that I went through.
So you could, if you wanted to buy copies to sell at shows and things, you can buy plenty of copies for yourself and then put your own markup on, or you can sell it via their website.
Yes. You've got both options. I was tempted to order a batch, but I don't have space to store them at the moment. And you can get quite good discounts once you order. I think it's over 10, but they do special offers quite a bit of the time. So I've ordered a few copies and I'll just gradually build up a stock so that when I do take it to a show, I've got some with me.
Are you thinking of it as extra profit? Are you thinking of it as marketing, or what are you, you know, what would you like for it?
I'm thinking of it as a way to promote the paintings, I think. And my intention is to get it set up on my website to sell the small paintings directly from the website. And then, you know, when I am at exhibitions or shows, it will be a section of the work that I'm presenting alongside the larger paintings and other pieces of work that I do.
And if you don't want to write, I mean, the writing is fantastic in here and it's a great extra, but you can do picture books on Blurb as well, I think, can't you, where you don't actually even have writing. And you can just put together a lovely, even just a collection of your paintings, put together in a book like this to give to family and friends for Christmas, if they like. I don't know that my mother would like a book of my abstract paintings, but it's so interesting. I love the fact that you, like I say, what's inspiring about it to me is you just took this seemingly negative thing, I can't go to my favourite place where I was really wanting to go to, and I'm stuck here at home and I can't do shows or whatever, and turned it into something really positive. And it's just lovely.
And for me, I mean, I've always had, my dad would tell you, I've always had a bit of an overactive imagination, even as a child. And I suppose for me, I really did feel for a few moments as if I was back there. The memories were that powerful when it was combined with the photographs, the painting and writing about them. And even when I read them, it puts me straight back there. So, you know, for me, it was a way of escaping the lockdown. And it's very interesting as well. The other day, I think you did a live stream into the group, and you were talking about this whole thing about, you know, when you're thinking about something and you're thinking, well, this should have happened and that should have happened. And I did have a lot of negative feelings about not being able to go. And, you know, the days where I was supposed to be there and thinking, well, I should be there now and I'm not, I'm stuck at home. And I just tried to think, well, I'm just going to imagine as if I am there and I'm going to write about that and explore that memory. And it did help me. And it was a great comfort, you know, during those times of lockdown when you kind of, that frustration hits you sometimes.
Yeah. Do you have favourites in the book?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think one of my favourites has got to be number 6, The Perfect Sunrise, because it's one of the things that I absolutely love to do when I'm down there, to get up early before anyone else is around, and you've got the place to yourself, you can walk about freely, and you just find these amazing little spaces that during the daytime are, you know, sort of crowded, busy, whatever, and you're just there with the sunrise yourself, and it's just amazing. I love it.
I love that poem. Are they poems? They look like poems to me.
I'm not sure. I think sort of. I'm not really sure how I'd categorise them.
I do love the description of that. It's just, you're all going to go get your own copy of this book so you'll be able to read it. But it's a description of being up at 4:45 a.m. and kind of going out in the chilly, empty morning and walking through the town and going to a high spot to watch the sun come up. And it's just beautiful. And another thing I wanted to ask you about was the photograph that goes with Beach Clean. What is that a photograph of?
So that is various bits of plastic that I picked up that day on the beach. And it was shocking because it was, you couldn't take more than one step before you'd see another bit and another bit and another bit. And I came back with 2 carrier bags full, one full of beach rope and one full of plastic. And I set to and washed it all and selected the bits I wanted to bring home. And there were some bits that were just too far gone. So I disposed of them in the bin. And yeah, so I came back with more than I went with.
What does your husband think of collections of little bits of plastic brought back from Sinai?
Oh, well, it sort of merges in with the rest of the clutter, to be honest. I don't think anything surprises him anymore.
So what would your advice be to someone, if somebody wants to try doing something like this? What I can imagine, if it's me doing it, I can imagine starting to feel overwhelmed by the scope of what might go in here. Like, how did you organize it and keep it on track?
Well, I think doing it within the structure of the 100-day project helped me a lot, because I just did a little bit each day and it evolved. And at the beginning, I wasn't intending for it to be a book at all. It was just going to be a series of posts on Instagram, and I would write about them on my blog, perhaps on my website, and that was it. And again, because of lockdown, I started to call my dad every day, just check up on him, make sure he was all right. And I thought, what can I send him to, you know, to sort of cheer him up? So I printed some of the poems and the pictures just on A4 paper and sent them to him in the post. And then I started reading them to him on the phone. So every day he'd say to me, oh, have you got another one for me today? And I would sit there and read them out to him. And at one point during that, it just occurred to me, it was like a light bulb moment, to put them into a book. And then from that point on, I was starting to figure out how to do it, just did it step by step, really. So I never had this grand plan of, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to include all this in it. And I haven't included all of the memories in there that I've written about. There are some more which I may put into a second edition at some point. But it, you know, it just evolved, really. And I think, it's coming back to some of the things that, you know, you and Alice talk about on the podcast, just doing it a step at a time and not getting too hung up on the end result and just letting it evolve. And that's how it kind of got to where it is now.
Oh, that's such a good point. So it's like painting. It's like, just let it, don't force yourself onto it. Just let it be whatever it's going to be and it'll develop naturally. And then there's no pressure, is there? So there's no expectation this big thing that's going to come out of it.
Yeah. The only expectation I set for myself was that I wanted, because obviously I was talking to Dad about it on the phone and he said to me, I definitely want a copy of this book. You know, I've got a copy of the book that your mother wrote and I want one from you as well. And I was like, oh, no pressure then. But that was what helped me set the deadline. So I thought, right, I'm just going to do it and get it done by the end of July so that when we go over and see him in August, I can take it with me. And that worked out. So, you know, I'm pleased about it from that point of view. And if nothing else came of it, the fact that, you know, he's enjoying it and he's had it for his birthday is, you know, good for me. I'm happy with that, you know.
I think that's a good point. So you keeping it light in the sense of what it's going to be and not predetermine it, but you're not keeping it light and loose in the sense of, oh, well, I'll just get to it whenever I get to it. You had a very specific deadline, but I think for anyone else who's thinking of doing this, probably setting yourself a realistic time frame and a reason why, if that reason is only because you've promised your friend, you know, or something on a certain day, or maybe it's an exhibition you go into and you want to have copies of the book. But having, I think that's a really good point, a reason to give yourself that deadline, because it's very easy to let yourself off the hook. And I think the danger of that is a project like this could go on forever. Like, you could keep doing paintings and keep writing about it and it could just keep getting thicker and thicker and never get created. Go buy a copy, everybody.
Yeah, and go and visit St Ives, because it's such an inspirational place to be and any time of the year. And I was lucky enough last year to go there several times at different times of the year. And I love it as much in November as in June. It's different, but it's just, you know, there's something there to inspire the artist in me. So,
well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much, Gwen. This has been really helpful for everybody, I'm sure. And you've actually just totally inspired me. So I'll be off trying to come up with plans now.
I already want to buy a copy of your book. So no pressure, please. But put me down for a copy.
All right. Thanks, Gwen.
Thank you.
So I really enjoyed those. It was a kind of surprise for me to listen to what you and Gwyn spoke about. And just this feeling, I really love the way that it touched on both of them, this sense of being brave, taking rolling momentum with something like Faye's story of how she used the bad weather of the rain and turned it into this project that not only inspired her, but inspired others. You know, really encouraging, both of those.
What I loved about them both is that they took what felt negative at the beginning. So Faye was really disappointed about what had been cancelled. Gwyn was really disappointed she couldn't go for her trips to St Ives and her classes there. And both of them turned it into something really positive. And that's what I found so inspiring about them and the other people that we've talked about and featured, is just this sense of, okay, we can sit around and moan, and we all do it from time to time, but we can also just be brave. And actually listening to Faye made me realize something, that the lockdown, the only thing it affected for me is I gave up my plan to apply to lots of things, and Faye didn't. I gave up mine. I started the year with that being a big goal, that I was going to get into two prestigious shows. And I was going to put myself out there to get rejected in order to do that. And because I find that difficult, getting rejected or having my work rejected, I should say. And I did one in January and it went well. And then when lockdown came, I just dropped the whole idea. And it's been fine because I'm focused on something different that I'm really positive about. However, it makes me realize, listening to Faye, that she didn't, and look at the payoff for her.
Mm. And it was, it's also, and I, perhaps it's the same idea, is that it's the idea of giving up or stepping into something, isn't it? You know, time just is going to keep moving forward anyway. So, you know, what are you going to do with it? And I think what I like about both of them, and maybe in particular Gwyn's story, you know, she's not put together a book before. She's not done it before. But it was an idea that grew, and, you know, she figured it out. Like you say, with your canvas, you work it out, you make it work. Don't look at other people and think, oh, well, they know how to do that. No, everybody's learned how to do that. You know, Faye says it's with her, you know, she's good. She enjoys social media. And there is a longer version of this interview. But in there, she talks that there are other things that she finds difficult to do, like building a website is difficult to do, and she needs help with that. But the point is, you don't stop. And I think all of us have this balance between what we're going to do, what we're going to do right now. And I think it's fine to take your foot off the accelerator if you need to, but at some point you've got to pick it up and get things gently rolling on again. So yeah, it was a good week to hear that for me.
I think the other thing about this, listening to those stories, and when I have conversations with other artists in general, is it's inspiring and it gets you going again, and it sparks ideas for yourself. And it can be the strangest thing that someone says, but if you don't have those conversations and you're not in groups or you're not out there with other artists, you can't get those sparks. I mean, you can get inspiration from other places, of course, but I find that was missing for me a few years ago. I didn't have that. And now that that's all available to us because of the internet and Facebook groups, and I know some people have issues with Facebook, but those Facebook groups have been a lifeline for me in so many different ways.
Yeah. And if you are interested, Faye mentioned Connected Artists. I will be opening it up to those people who are on the wait list. And if you want to find out more about when that opens, it will be in November. You can go to alicesheridan.com/artists. It's there in the menu as an option, and just add your name to hear all the details about that when we are ready. Okay, so this week, what's inspired you?
Well, I have a couple of things. First thing is a film that I watched that somebody recommended to me, and you have to pay for this film. It's on demand all over the place. I watched it on Amazon, and it's called The Painter and the Thief. Really recommend it. I won't spoil anything, but the premise of the story is, I think it's in Norway, a woman, a female painter, had two big paintings stolen from a gallery. The thief was arrested. She went to talk to him in court, and the film is about the relationship that develops between her and the guy who stole her paintings, and it's about what happened to the paintings, and it's just really different and really good. So it costs money to watch it, unfortunately, unless you have an illegal source of downloads, and I don't recommend that, but I think it's well worth it. So it's called The Painter and the Thief, and I think it's in all sorts of places, but it's definitely on Amazon to buy. So that was the first thing. And the second thing was really sad news, but also really inspiring news about Tracy Emin, who everybody knows. I love, and I know people know that because when the news came out that she's been very ill with cancer, my inbox was like filled up as if I was her mother or something. There were all these people sending me emails saying, did you see this article? And there was a specific article on Apple News, I think it was from the Times maybe, where she was talking about her experiences, and she's had a gruesome time with cancer, and it was diagnosed during lockdown. And so it's only been very recent, and she's had to have major, major surgeries. So her body is completely altered. But just the fact that she's still so very Tracy Emin about it all, I found, you know, really sad. I just hope she's okay, but also so inspiring her attitude. She's still just this completely ballsy woman. I have a little thing in my studio, WWTD, and what would Tracy do? And I never managed to do what Tracy would do, but it's like the thing I wish I would do.
It's interesting. I was talking with a friend this morning as we were walking about this, and she said that I haven't seen it, but I've read an article, and I think there's a video interview out with her at the moment. And she said, they said, what one thing do you regret or do you wish that you had done differently? And she said she wishes that she hadn't spent so much time partying. She wishes that she had been more committed to her art practice, which again, it's interesting, isn't it? For us looking at the outside, like, she seems pretty committed to her art practice, right? And yet she feels that she could have done more, which perhaps is, you know, putting a little bit too much on yourself. But also we were saying, but without that life, the partying, her attitude, her approach, that's all wrapped in together. Like, you can't just sit and work. You've got to have something that gives you those experiences and the drive and the energy and the, you know, the direction to take back into your work. So it's just that element of it for me was interesting. A, she still feels that she hasn't done enough. And also, what is it of ourselves that we put into our work? Because you've got to be having a life too.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I hope you, Tracy, I know you'll be listening. So I hope you're feeling okay. What about you?
I'm really bad because all week I've been thinking, oh, that would be a good thing to say on the podcast. And I just haven't written them down and I can't remember what. I mean, I just feel like this week has been a good week. It's been a busy week. It's been a really good week. But what I thought I would do is I might start, we'll have to see what comes in. And please, please don't send my email address on to anybody, but I did think I would leave you with this because I read out before some interesting things that we have been referred to or people have suggested that we might like to share with you on the podcast. But coming into my inbox this week was somebody, John Quinn. So he says, my team and I have recently created a guide for individuals who want to learn more about wallpaper. How to put it up, how to take it down, how to keep it in good condition. And I thought that this would be a helpful addition for you. So if you would like home-related questions and answers about how to deal with wallpaper. Anyway, suffice to say, I'm not going to add that link to the show notes.
Oh, is this, I was going to say, is this for your website or for our podcast? This is for our podcast.
I don't know why that is relevant anyway, but if anybody's interested in wallpaper, what I do is I suggest you Google how to put up wallpaper, but otherwise John Quinn will help you out. So that's my giggle. I'm going to leave that with you then. That's my giggle for the week rather than what's inspired you. So
that's good.
That's it. Right. That's us over and out, and we will see you again next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.